ready to talk about some voodoo, and mispronounce so many words.
Oh my gosh, yes.
There are so many words to mispronounce. So, hello, and welcome all to this week's episode of Whiskey and Wizards. Maybe more like this month's episode.
Yikes.
Sorry. The podcast where we drink whiskey and talk about all the historically awesome, magical things and people. This week's episode is one of our favorites that we've done and have been looking forward to since we started this whole thing before the world fell into even deeper shit.
Dun, dun, dun!
I feel like we started this thing about a year ago, right? When things were, you know, they weren't great, but they weren't the dumpster fire yet, right? We were at the beginning stages of the dumpster fire.
And well, yeah, we started this happened. Like right before the pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
And then
wildfires and pandemic.
Murder and hornets. Deaths,
murder hornets and all the things happened and are still happening. So
yeah,
our perspective, I think, has shifted a little bit. And also, you know, I think all of us have to give ourselves a little bit of a grace when it comes to doing the things, you know, the work and the school and the podcasts and the things, because
yeah,
life is hard enough to get through. So thank you for bearing with us, everybody. But just like with any other episode, this is just kind of a brief overview of what this rich and interesting history actually entails. We're barely dipping our toe in here, folks.
And as always, we have no idea what the fuck we're talking about.
We will pretend as well as we can.
I mean, we did read things that we believe are credible sources.
Right.
But...
And we're parroting them back as accurately as we can while drinking whiskey.
So probably not that accurately. So just like that caveat, please don't take anything we say as anything, but...
No, just the spirit in which it is intended.
Yeah.
To have fun talking about super
and
cool people.
And then go learn for yourself, you lazy asshole. I'm just kidding.
This is just the starting point, guys. This is just the starting point. There is so much involved in this particular form of magic and its practitioners that 1 hour just wouldn't do it justice. So we'll definitely be doing other episodes surrounding this topic. But this week we're learning about specifically New Orleans voodoo, the priests and priestesses, those who practice it, particularly two individuals, Dr. John and Marie Laveau, the voodoo queen and king / priests and priestesses of New Orleans.
Voodoo. That's a thing, right?
Yeah, it could be. Sure. I'm sure they say it all the time. But there is definitely a lot of confusion out there, even still after doing all this research, as to the difference between voodoo, hoodoo, New Orleans voodoo, Haitian voodoo, Louisiana voodoo, all those iterations. But this week in particular, we're focusing on New Orleans voodoo. They all pretty much have some ties, the same ties, back to different areas in Africa. And thanks to slavery and African diaspora across the Caribbean and Cuba, and eventually landing into New Orleans, they all have gotten lots of bits from the original, and this is where the first mispronunciation begins, Voodoo religion of Africa.
I think maybe thanks to slavery kind of sounds bad, despite, well,
no,
because,
I mean,
of
it's
slavery.
Because of slavery. Yeah. It's more like
because of the terrible, terrible thing that is slavery.
I'm saying it in the sense, in the like spirit of like, thanks slavery, you know, like thanks Obama, you know, like that, right? Except
gotcha.
Way worse. But also the melding of the Franco-Catholicism, in the case of New Orleans voodoo, that all kind of had its part to play in creating New Orleans voodoo. But before we delve into all of that, first, what are we drinking and how boozy are we? We are surprisingly not that boozy yet for it being this
It's noon and we're not.
I'm disappointed in us.
I know.
I'm disappointed in us.
We're going to fix it. Don't worry. Let's talk about voodoo.
All right. So... Of course, this is a easy topic to match our whiskey to, so we're going to have some bourbon to honor the location from which our topic has sprung, New Orleans.
Louisiana.
Yeah, Louisiana. So we are drinking Breckenridge bourbon, which is brewed here in our lovely Colorado.
Not Louisiana.
Not Louisiana.
But unfortunately,
it's still bourbon and
it's delicious.
It's so good.
Yeah.
It's so smooth and easy to drink. Robin was like, what are we drinking it with? I'm like, with bourbon. She was so surprised that I wanted to drink it by itself. But Breckenridge Bourbon does such a good job making this. Yeah. It is so tasty. It really, and we say this about a lot of the things that aren't scotch, but I do feel like it tastes more like a scotch than a bourbon.
I just myself. Think that anything that's sippable should be scotch in my brain, but it's not. Obviously.
It's not. It's not, but it's really good. And
it's a lot sweeter than scotch, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, kind of bourbon is typically a little bit sweeter, I feel like, but it's not so sweet that it's not palatable.
It's really good. Yeah. No, it's very subtle. It's got a lot of brown sugar, I think.
It doesn't have
vanilla.
Yeah, I don't have any burn from it either. Like, as far as drinking it goes, there's no like, it's alcohol, you know?
No, it's delicious. Yeah. It's pretty dangerous.
And
honestly.
I have a huge handle of it thanks to Costco. So, yeah, it's really good. It's from Colorado. Breckenridge Brewery does a lot of great stuff. They don't just make bourbons, they make beer and all kinds of great stuff. But this is definitely delicious. I'm really happy about it. And I think everybody should try some of it, especially if you want a good and inexpensive whiskey to try. It's not an expensive whiskey. It's not like a Macallan or something like that. So it's really good. Cheers. Real quick before we get started, I just kind of want to outline what our pentagram of knowledge here will be and how we're going to talk about this sort of complex issue. First, I really want to start off with where it came from. And when, because where it has roots from is really important to what it is now, as well as when it came to Louisiana, because that makes a big difference in its longevity and its importance to the culture and historically the people there. So that will then lead us into talking about exactly what it became once the slaves were settled in the areas. And then we'll go into the brief history of it in New Orleans, because there were some ups and downs for sure over the years there. And then we'll talk about the role of the priests and priestesses in this new iteration of the religion. Then we'll finish up with Dr. John and Marie Laveau. So I know we're talking a lot about more what it is and where it came from, but in this instance, I think it's important because we all have this preconceived notion of what voodoo is, but that's really just what has been shown to us in popular culture, which isn't necessarily what it is. It's really a misrepresentation.
Yeah, I was actually pretty surprised when I learned more about it, and also kind of ashamed of myself in thinking that it was like this like dark like
tribal
like raise the zombies type of like it's not at all like even voodoo dolls are completely different than like what but I mean this is because of
and of course like because
Hollywood
snakes are creepy and their use of snakes and stuff, it's like ooh, evil creepy snakes. We associate snakes with evil thanks to the Christian mythology of Satan representing himself as a snake and all that stuff, whereas in their religion it's not evil by any means, but pop culture presents it as this dark, you know, taboo type thing. So I think it's important for us to kind of knock down those preconceptions before we talk about the major practitioners, because it's definitely not what you think it is. So now we kind of have our where, our when, our how, our who, and our what that we'll be discussing, and this awesome thing. So let's get into it. So where it came from, of course, was Africa. So thanks to thanks slavery, the religion of Vodun came to New Orleans in around 1719 to 1731, and it was of course a religion probably dating back to the beginning of human history in that time there, but it came to New Orleans in 1719 and 1731 when French colonialism was happening in that area. It also went to Haiti and Cuba, which a little later on, those same slaves and their descendants and slave owners did come from Haiti and Cuba to New Orleans, which is how hoodoo and voodoo tends to get mixed up and melded. Voodoo is an African-based spirituality rooted in West African Dabomeyan Vodun, which is spelled Dabomeyan, in case anybody wants to try and pronounce that themselves. But in that language, Vodun means spirit. So at the heart of this particular region is the word that represents it, spirit. Some of the other areas in Africa that this religion came out of were Bambara, Mandinga, Rolof, Yoruba, Chamba, the Congo, and several others. They all brought their own cultural practices and contributed much to voodoo. Once they got to Louisiana, the religion was, of course, spoken in Louisiana Creole and became blended with Haitian voodoo and deep Southern voodoo, as well as the Francophile religion of Catholicism, which was really surprising to both of us when we read about it, how intricately linked Catholicism and voodoo has become.
Well, yeah, and many voodoo practitioners consider themselves to be Christians.
Right, which seems like antithetical, you
right,
know?
Yeah, which everything I thought I knew, but...
Which contributed to even more of my confusion, because even though, you know, I tried to have conversations with, you know, Catholics about this belief, and I tried to understand how they can work side by side, I still don't completely get it, but I think I get it a little bit more now.
Yeah. And this started because the slaves were not allowed to practice their religion. Right. And so they tied it with Catholicism so that they could keep practicing. And right. they started using, like, borrowing from Catholicism for their rituals and
right.
things.
Right. And then, of course, it just kind of morphed from there.
Yeah. So, but voodoo is a monotheistic religion.
At its heart, essentially, yeah. Yeah, it has a very similar structure to Catholicism, which is why it was so easy for them to adopt some of the Catholic traits. You know, it has a very similar structure. But before we get into what it became, let's talk about what it started as, briefly, and I'm sure shallowly, because I'm sure people could probably do a whole thesis on this topic. But the African Vodun is a cosmology centering around Vodun, or spirit, which is known as, and I'm sure I'm saying this wrong, and I will be saying it wrong the whole time, but I'm going to say it how it looks, Loa in voodoo. So Loa is a spirit. The spirits are typically known as that, and they represent elements of the divine essence that govern aspects of human life. So the spiritual hierarchy ranges in power from major deities governing nature and human society to deities that represent individual trees, rocks, as well as dozens of ethnic Vodun defining certain clans, tribes, and nations. So they have a spirit for, there's tree spirits, river spirits, water spirits, sky spirits, spirits for each individual clan, that kinds of stuff. Vodun's are center of religious life, as well as ancestor worship is very important, which from a lot of my reading, it can be said that the ancestor worship has contributed to the longevity of voodoo, which I think is really important. The Vodun religion holds that the belief in the spirit of the dead lives side by side with the living. So they aren't separated by heaven and hell, but rather they're on the same plane of existence. Each family of spirit has its own female priesthood, sometimes hereditary, from mother to blood daughter. So it is not only a monotheistic religion, but it also is matriarchal, which I respect.
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah. The divine creator in this religion and in the voodoo that sprang from it is a female being. And they're like, fuck yeah, she's a female. In Vodun, she's called Mawu and is depicted as an elderly woman who is gentle and forgiving and is a god who owns all other gods. She has 7 children who are called, again, completely wrong pronunciation here, guys, I'm sure, Sakpate, who is the Vodun of the earth, Ebioso, who is the Vodun of thunder and divine justice, Agbe, who is the Vodun of agriculture and forest, Gu, who is Vodun of air, and finally, Legba, who is Vodun of the unpredictable. Legba, a lot of us have heard on. Papa Legba, that's a familiar name to people in pop culture. It's in American Horror Story. I think they bring it up in like that Disney movie, even Papa Legba. He is shown in the African religion of Vodun. He is shown as a phallus or a man with a prominent phallus. Yeah, right.
Who doesn't like that?
Well, apparently them, because once they got to New Orleans, he's been shown as an old man with crutches.
Oh boy!
And due to his age,
really he's downgraded, to be
white. Huh? But you know, he's the Vodun of the unpredictable. The Vodun's creator embodies a dual cosmology. There's Mawu, who's the moon, and Lisa, who's the sun. Lisa's the sun god, Mawu's the moon goddess. When Lisa pushes, Mawu forgives. It's just a proverb in Vodun. a little on Legba and why he is, we all know his name. He's the chief of all Vodun, or Loa, and only through contact with Legba is it possible to contact Dan, who is Mawu's androgynous son, who is represented as a rainbow serpent and remains with Mawu as a go-between with her other creations, and is also a mediator between the spirits and the living. So Dan maintains balance, order, and peace. So a practitioner has to contact Legba, who contacts Dan, who sounds like Mawu's emissary, you know? But if I'm right in this, a practitioner can also contact other Loa without Legba. He's just necessary to be within a degree of the divine creator, if I have that right.
All right.
I could very easily not. Maybe they always have to contact Legba. In Vodun, all creation is considered divine, and therefore all creation contains power of the divine. So medicine, herbal remedies, they're all understood that way. And this explains the use of mundane objects in religious rituals like talismans called fetishes. They're typically objects such as statues or dried animal or human parts sold or used for their healing, spirituality, and rejuvenating properties. They are objects that are inhabited by spirits and entities that inhabit the fetish are able to perform different tasks according to like what they're the spirit of. You know, you can't just be like, hey, Dan, come down here and do something for me, when it has absolutely nothing to do with like the realm in which he controls.
Right.
You know?
Like the saints.
Yeah, exactly like the saints, which is why it was so easy for them to adopt.
Yeah.
That. They're objects that are often combined together, fetishes, are often combined together in the construction of shrines used to call forth the specific Vodun in their associated powers. So depending on what you're needing, your shrine and such will be built to the Loa that controls that aspect of right. life.
With things that they like.
Yes, exactly. You want to draw them forth. And I shouldn't say you. An individual, from what we have learned, an individual person can't necessarily do this. It has to be a person who has been chosen to be the priest or priestess of the religion in order to call these spirits forth. But we'll get into that a little bit later. So that's the African Vodun. That's where the New Orleans voodoo came from. That's the heart of what it is. And then through the big, disgusting game of telephone that is slavery, this beautiful and rich religion of New Orleans voodoo was formed. So some big differences that sprang from this religion between hoodoo and voodoo, and there's a lot of intricate details, actually. There's like a lot of small things. There's no big difference. But voodoo is technically an actual religion, whereas hoodoo is not. The differences there being that voodoo has its own ritual leaders, teachers, representatives, services, and two distinct branches, whereas hoodoo has no organizational structure and is practiced by individuals, sometimes called root doctors or root healers. But most practitioners agree that voodoo was the original religion and hoodoo became a sort of denomination of it.
Okay.
Yeah. So there's no huge difference necessarily, except for I do believe hoodoo is a little bit more lax with some of the rules as far as negative charms and talismans, you know, curses and that kinds of stuff go. But again, I didn't get too much into what hoodoo is because voodoo was already a lot.
Yeah.
So we've got Vodun, which when slaves were taken from Africa to Haiti, the Caribbean, and New Orleans, Cuba, and those areas, then of course movement around that area mixed it all up a bit, and we have Haitian voodoo and Louisiana voodoo from that.
You know what's interesting is that I read that actually a voodoo ritual in Haiti was part of like the Haitian uprising that got like the French out and helped them claim their independence.
That is also responsible for voodoo being banned.
Right. A lot of the negative, like negative, I guess, press, I don't, for lack of a better word, about voodoo came from like misunderstandings of what was going on in that ritual.
It also, I mean, a lot of the negative press from everything I read also just came from, so voodoo is not something that you practice in your own home. It's not something that like you sit and you pray to a deity or a saint, right? It's a communal thing. There's the rituals hundreds of thousands of people can come to. Like it's a group practice, it seems like, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And at the time, there'd be spectators to these rituals, right? And of course, because of racism, these expectation. The spectators would write about this as
right
a tribalistic.
Right. It scared the white Europeans because they weren't used to it. Yeah. And then people just took it at face value. But I thought it was interesting because basically France had lost Haiti because of that uprising. Mm-hmm. And like voodoo had played a big role in it, mm-hmm. actually. And then they pretty much like because they were trying to get it back, they like pretty much gave up Louisiana mm-hmm. and like most of mm-hmm. their holdings in what is now the United States. Mm-hmm. It was instrumental in the Louisiana Purchase. And I thought that was really interesting. Yeah. I had no idea.
And it was because of the sheer volume. There was a ratio of like 2-1 slaves to slave owners.
Yeah.
At that time, they had stolen so many people from their homes.
My gosh.
That the slaves outnumbered them 2-1 at least. And the French had these rules that families stayed together.
Yeah.
So they didn't separate them in the same way. So, yeah, there was a lot of that in the pot helping to kind of kick them out. And again, it was like the fear of this hoodoo yeah. ritual.
I just thought it was interesting. Like, a lot of the things that we think that we know about voodoo are because of, like, we just took it at face value, what, like, a few Frenchmen said about it.
What it was represented yeah. as. Yeah, absolutely.
It's interesting.
As so many things in our own, like, history and collective consciousness, it's rooted in racism,
mm-hmm.
for sure. So I think that's something really important to keep in mind about what this religion is and why it is so focused on what it is, which is protection, really.
Mm-hmm.
So that leads us a little bit into what it is now or what it was when Marie Laveau was practicing it, a practitioner of it. That bourbon's starting to kick in now, guys. Let's re-ask that question. How boozy are we? We're getting there. We're getting there. The tongue's getting a little loose.
Yeah, yeah. So that's where it gets fun.
Of course, it's still typically spoken in Louisiana Creole, which I still have not heard myself. I would like to hear that language type myself. I probably could have looked into that a little bit more and watched a YouTube video or something, but I didn't because I'm lazy. So Louisiana voodoo, that's here we're at now. It follows a belief in an omnipotent and unknowable supreme creator named Bon Dieu, which comes from the French term bon Dieu, meaning good God.
The good God.
Good
the
God, good, y'all.
Not good God, not the good God.
Good God.
God. All right.
Practitioners of voodoo do believe that bon Dieu does not directly intercede in the lives of human beings, but that voodoo priests and priestesses can call upon the Loa or spirits to work for the supreme creator.
Loa or Loa?
Loa. Different Loa are responsible for different aspects of human life, which is reminiscent of where it came from in Africa. Different spirit for different things. Which I really love this idea of this like supreme creator, right? Mawu just being up there being like, yeah, I'll just handle yourself. I created you.
I mean,
good.
I don't blame him.
Parent, right? It's like any parent. You birth this being, these beings, and you're like, now just take care of yourself, right?
Man, if only that's how it worked, right?
Three of voodoo's most important families of spirits that sprung from the supreme creator are those belonging to Rada, who is the benevolent Loa, Petra, which is angry and violent, and Gede, which is a Loa of death and the dead. It is the Gede Loa, many at least, that are the zombies, but not in the traditional sense of the word. In voodoo, the zombie is not a victim or a monster. It's more like a servant to the living being who raised them from the dead. Which reminds me a lot of both the golem and... Do you remember when we talked about...
Abe no se me?
Yeah.
Oh, good.
Go.
I was like...
Woo! Good job,
woo,
Robin.
Woo.
Abe no se me.
You guys have no idea how great that was. I smoked so much weed that I don't
seriously.
Even remember, like... Somebody's name named Laura.
Yeah, that was really impressive.
So you're welcome.
I'm shocked. It can be said, and some of the research I read says that the idea of the zombie came into being as a means of expressing the deadness of being a slave. So it can be supposed that zombies and voodoo itself arose as a spiritual force among slaves to help them endure their suffering. But I think that can be said of, you know, any religion or belief, really, to help us, you know, it's created to help us endure are suffering. Right? Yeah.
They just had more suffering
to endure. They just had more suffering to endure. Absolutely. So all groups of slaves from the areas they were stolen from contributed to the development of Louisiana voodoo in their knowledge of herbs, poisons, ritual creation of charms, and amulets to protect themselves and others that became key elements in voodoo. One thing that we really want to stress here is that voodoo that we all know from popular culture of this darkness and the bones and the evil and, you know, like cutting chicken throats over sigils and stuff like that, it's not what voodoo really is.
Yeah. Like, even, like, Sarah was talking about the zombies. Mm-hmm. Like, before I learned a little bit more about it, when I thought about voodoo, I thought about these, like, you know, priests and priestesses, like, rising up, like, mm-hmm. Dawn of the Dead style zombies to go kill people. Like, that's not at all what right. they are.
No, I mean, this is a religion that primarily sells grease and charms and amulets for protection
and like and good luck and things
for yes. protection. Yeah. So it's about that more than a protection from illness, protection from evil, protection in their daily lives. Mm-hmm. There's not a lot of like divination and future telling going on here, not from the actual practitioners.
Well, I mean, there is a little bit of that, but it's not
right.
I mean,
it's not like I want to become rich and famous. So, you know, endow me with these gifts or whatever.
I think, and it'll be an interesting discussion about Marie Laveau, because mm-hmm. she did use some of that to try, like, politically.
Right. But she used that for her, like, wealthy customers, right?
Right. Yeah. And, I mean, you got to look at when she was alive. Like, it yeah. wasn't, like, a black woman living back then is not going to have, mm-hmm. you know, the kind of... I mean, she's going to have to do what she's going to have to do to, like, position herself.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and yeah. I mean, she her father was the mayor, you know, mm-hmm. she had, like...
Yeah, she did well for herself with what she had.
She did well for herself, but, like, it's still... You need to realize that, you know, she was born in, like, 1801. Mm-hmm. Like, this woman was not, like... She wasn't born into, like, this great time to be black or, no. you know.
Well, can that be said of any time, really?
Oh, my gosh, yeah.
but yeah, so they're not trying to necessarily, like, see the future and gain prosperity and wealth necessarily. That's not the root of what it is. So that's something that's, I think, really important for us to knock out that misconception of it before we really get into what it is.
Yeah.
A lot of what it comes from, like, their rituals... Their songs, their amulets, their grease, or their fetishes, they're there for protection purposes, which I think really speaks to the fact that this came out of a group of slaves. Mm-hmm. Like, this came out of a religion of people looking to protect themselves from evil, looking to protect themselves from harm, looking to protect their families, as opposed to necessarily self-promotion.
Right.
So, you know, when we talked about our Egyptian thing, we talked about how religions are born from a necessity, the necessity of... the culture, the necessity of the people, mm-hmm. you know, and once that religion no longer suits that culture, it changes. Things change based on the cultural needs. And I think that's kind of what happened in this right. creation of Louisiana voodoo. In the Louisiana voodoo practice, singing is the biggest part of the rituals. Songs have been passed down orally for hundreds of years, songs accompanied by patting, clapping, and foot stomping. But not drum playing unless it's part of the weekly public ceremony in Congo Square in New Orleans during slavery time. So from what I've heard, and this is kind of what I was referencing when I talked about the spectatorship, from the weekly gatherings were sort of group rituals, which you could compare to a Sunday service at church, right? Week, it was a big thing, it was a big gathering. And you have these news reports from this time decrying it as savage and evil and indecent because, you know, there's... a bunch of black people singing songs and patting and chanting and bathing in ritual waters and shit like that, yeah. right?
Which to the Puritan white Europeans, right. once again, it was like, oh, I'm seeing a sex ritual. I'm seeing an animal sacrifice. Right. This is wrong, you know?
I mean, let's not even like date it back to then. I mean, let's say a group of white Christians saw that now. They'd be fucking terrified.
Right.
Like, they'd be fucking terrified and posting shit all over the place. Like, that's... Anything different from what they have is gonna be seen as evil and indecent, right?
I mean, you went to that evangelical church with me. You saw, like, the praise and worship, like, the... Right. people like speaking in tongues right. and like falling on the floor and things like
oh God.
I just think this church, like if
this
you
church that Robin and I went to in high school was fucking terrifying looking
back
on it now.
It was Jesus camp. Like
It was. I mean, they tried to teach you how to, like, I came into it later. Robin was raised in it. I was not. I came into it as a teenager. And they, like, tried to teach you how to speak in tongues and shit and, like, talk you into it. Like, this is something that's totally normal and natural. And,
yeah, and, like, we prayed for George Bush as a congregation. I don't know. I don't want to talk about it. My point is, it's not that different.
No.
Like, I just think it's very...
hypocritical?
Yeah. Of, like, people, like, modern Christians, like, pointing the finger at this and judging it and saying, like, this is tribal or something. Right. When, like, the fucking praise and worship ceremony at your church is tribal.
It is. Yeah. It is. Even still, you sing hymns, you sing songs, you raise your hands to Jesus, right? You dance. The song is an integral part of... worship still. It is. It's very much, but because it's black people, because it's slaves, then you can say this is indecent, this is tribal, this is
Because it's all about robbing them of power to be equal human beings, and it's disgusting.
Right. And just that mentality that religions and, you know, white people have of I'm better than you. What I believe is better than you. My position is better than yours.
Which is just...
So therefore, everything that you are doing is wrong.
It's interesting, though, because you think about, like, why the Puritans came to the United to America in the first place.
To escape religious persecution.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So you would think that this group would be a little bit more open-minded. Yeah,
well,
but
except for their religion, the ultimate tenet is there shall be no other gods than me.
Right.
So, like, their religion precludes them from religious... tolerance.
I mean, I have no idea how accurate the witch was, but if it's anything like that, like, they were not, the early Protestants were very intolerant.
Having this conversation with my brother-in-law about religion, and again, we're talking about, you know, there's a big distinction between Catholicism and Puritanical Christian. You know, there's a bit of a difference there. However, they operate under this, what I got from him, you know, they operate under this belief that it is like they are in God's love and God's light, right? Why wouldn't they want to share that with people? Why wouldn't they want to share that? And also, from what I gleaned, and this was a really interesting tidbit. I love my brother-in-law, but I was like, really? They don't operate under this belief that if you don't believe in God, you will go to hell. It's you have the choice. You have the choice to either believe in God and go to heaven or not believe in God and go to hell. That is a choice. God is not making that choice for you, which I found to be incredibly interesting because that just completely takes away that.
Then why would you need to evangelize?
Well,
I don't know how to pronounce that word right now.
Right. I know what you're saying.
Evangelize. That's the word.
In which the Catholic faith seems to really believe they don't necessarily evangelize anything. That's the
which
Christian
is the big test. Difference.
It's the big difference. That's the big difference. The Catholic Church.
I
big
feel like
C,
the Spanish Inquisition kind of undermines that argument because, like, if
as you'll know, like the big C has never been like we're gonna change this group and this group and this group. It's the individual practitioners.
Well,
the individual
it's believe with us or else.
Right.
Like that's like the medieval Catholic Church. It wasn't ever.
And it's the individual. They maybe colonizers.
Didn't evangelize, but they also. Killed people who weren't Catholics or who were like, threatened
you don't
the power.
You don't have to believe this. This is your choice, but it's your choice between believing this or death.
Right.
So,
yeah.
Right. Exactly.
But if you threaten us, you're going to die.
Right. Exactly. But also, it's like the big C never necessarily sanctioned it. Like the big church never sanctioned it. It's the individual colonizers.
The big
the
church never sanctioned the Spanish Inquisition.
That was years prior. That was years prior. I'm talking about like 1700s slavery, you know, and as well as the conversion of Native Americans and indigenous peoples as well. You know, like that was never something that the church was like, we're going to do this on purpose. It was the individual practitioners, but it was also never like, you guys can't, it was never decried by the church. So it was never sanctioned, but it was never no-no'd. You know what I mean?
Hmm.
As far as Catholicism goes.
Yeah, you know? I mean, I wish that I had more to say on that topic because I don't know much about Catholicism.
I'm just speaking from their viewpoint. From their viewpoint, And one of the reasons why we're talking about this, you guys, is because it plays a really big role in what Louisiana voodoo is. From their viewpoint, they would never, quote unquote, forcefully indoctrinate someone, never forcefully convert someone.
Yes.
The church, the big C church.
That might be their viewpoint, but it is also true that slaves could not practice voodoo, so they adopted Catholicism to be more acceptable and to be able to practice their religion.
Yep.
And so it's just, yes, maybe the big C, the big C wasn't all about it. But
the individual French colonialists who were there, the individual slave owners who were there, absolutely.
Yeah, the result is the same.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's just interesting, like, that it was demonized when it's like a lot of the religions that we think are like these like crazy, like foreign evil things are really not that different.
No.
That's actually why I became an atheist.
Right.
Because I took a religions class and realized, like, oh, all religions are pretty much exactly the same. Right. Why are we demonizing these? Oh, are we all just looking for the same answers to life? Probably.
Probably.
God doesn't exist. Right. That was my conclusion.
Which like definitely pulls you into the, well, then humans are just shit. Because religion is supposed to be used to like set you on this like righteous path, right? But then it's always used to divide
and it's always used
to put you above somebody else, put you above another group of people,
right,
of non-believers, of people who believe something else, right? Absolutely. That was our religious rant of the day, you guys.
Sorry.
So, anywho, they did, songs were sung to give description of the personalities of the deities, such as their names, their likes, their dislikes, their origins, their responsibilities, their strengths, their weaknesses. And sometimes the songs were sung in address to the deity, and even sometimes as if the deity themselves were singing. So, like, from the point of view of the deity. So songs were really important. Many songs in Louisiana voodoo mirror tunes of the Catholic Church, actually. So that's one of those instances of integration. They sing these songs that are, you know, like hymns in a Catholic church. There's only two ways a new song could be added to the voodoo roster. First, if someone has heard it in a dream, which is believed to be the spirit's revelation. And the second is if the person is possessed and in a trance and asks the people around them to accept the song into their repertoire, which would be considered to come straight from the spirit or Loa itself.
Interesting.
Yeah. The goal of a lot of these rituals was to be possessed by the spirit for the priest or the priestess. They wanted the spirit to possess them. They were the only ones that could be possessed by the spirit, unless, of course, they were trying to, like, they were asking the spirit to possess the person that they were helping. Like, they could also say, like, hey, possess this person, right?
Yeah, which I think from the Christian evangelical point of view, just from my own history in that church, like, you would think of possession as, like, this evil thing.
Right.
However, evangelicals ask to be possessed by the Lord, and that's what speaking in tongues is supposed to be.
Right. Come into me, spirit.
Right.
Absolutely.
So I just think it's fascinating, like, this like demonized thing. Mm-hmm. Like, there are all these similarities.
Right. Where's the line? Where's the line of being asked to be possessed by something and it being bad versus it being good?
Yeah.
And it's because it's who's doing the asking.
It's very interesting.
Mm-hmm. It's who's doing the asking. Which, again, when we get kind of a little bit more into the integration of Catholicism and voodoo, it's exactly that. It's the accepted integration, the appropriate integration, and the Catholic Church, the Catholic priests in the area worked with the voodoo practitioners, and therefore it was it towed the line very easily. The goal of a lot of these rituals was to be possessed by the spirit for the priest or priestess. They were the only ones that could be. There are four phases to a voodoo ritual that can all be identified by the song being sung. And here they are. There's preparation, invocation, possession, and farewell. The songs were used to open the gate between Loa and the human world and to invite the spirit to possess the performer of the ritual. So it's a very ritualistic religion, which, again, can be said about Catholicism, Christianity. What is praying but speaking to a spirit and asking it to act on behalf of your own life?
Well,
right?
And a lot of the, like, voodoo rituals come straight from Catholicism. Mm-hmm. They use incense. Mm-hmm. They pray to a saint.
Right.
Like, it's very they're very similar. They sing, mm-hmm. you know, it's not that different. You're exactly right. No.
So as a result of the fusion of the Francophone culture and voodoo in Louisiana, Creoles of color associated many voodoo spirits with the Christian saints known to preside over the same domains. So they didn't have like, they didn't just associate any saint with any, you know, loa. It was the saint that was supposed to preside over the same aspect. So they were able to associate it with the same kind of thing. So in popular culture, both saints and spirits are believed to act as mediators with the Catholic priests or the voodoo priest or priestess led, who is presiding over the specific activities. So there are people who will pray to the saint of lost things, pray to the saint of protecting children, pray to the saints of whatever. So similarly, in voodoo, practitioners in Louisiana are praying to those same loa, but in their own particular ways as well. And I here's where I have a little bit of confusion here. I'm wondering if they call those saints by their Catholic saint names or if by their voodoo loa names. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if it matters.
Is it just the visage of the saint? Maybe it doesn't matter.
You know, I mean, if it's the same, if they're praying to the same thing, I don't know that it matters. Right. I mean,
that's essentially where my confusion lies, is like, where is that distinction? Is it on the individual practitioner or is it written somewhere? I mean, I'm not sure. Again,
it does seem like individual, like from what I've read, there's not really a standardized dogma mm-hmm. within voodoo. Like two temples can have different mythologies mm-hmm. and appeal to the loa in different ways. Mm-hmm. So it's not like really
set.
Right. And what you were saying was might be more of hoodoo mm-hmm. than, because voodoo is more
individualistic.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which, kudos to me for saying that word, because half of my face is numb.
That's how you know it's good stuff.
Thanks, Breckenridge Bourbon.
I thought it was interesting. I read about, probably pronouncing this wrong, but Villocon. It's the home of the loa. Ooh. As well as the deceased. It's commonly is described as being submerged or forested, which I think is cool.
Submerged what?
Submerged or forested.
Forested?
Yeah, so it's like...
What does forested mean?
I don't know. I picture like where the Ewoks live in Star Wars.
like isolated in some way?
No, in a forest. Forested.
Right. Right, but like isolated in a forest or like...
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Go for it. Continue. They're forested. I'm imagining
and it's an Ewok. It's now guarded by Loa Legba. And you must appease who you must appease before they can speak with any other Veloican resident. It's just, I thought it was an interesting tidbit.
What? Yeah. Oh my gosh, now I'm envisioning all of the voodoo Loa as like little Ewoks.
I know. Sorry for that.
And Mawu is C-3PO.
Oh, boy. Whoa, this is getting really offensive, probably.
Who would R2-D2 be? Dan? the midway between? That's like the spirit realm, then.
Yeah, I think I kind of took it to mean like it was kind of like purgatory sort of situation, like where you go when you die.
So kind of like Asgard. Like
I have no idea.
In Viking culture.
Yeah, I don't know about Viking. We should do a Viking episode. Well, that doesn't
definitely do a Viking episode. There's some pretty
is there magic-y things in Viking?
Fuck yes,
there is. In Viking?
In Viking. Viking lore.
Oh
yeah.
God. All right, absolutely. Let's keep going.
So, the early followers, back to what we were talking about before, the early followers of voodoo adopted images of Catholic saints to represent their spirits, and they also adopted the Hail Mary and the Lord's Prayer. So some say that this is why voodoo lasted as long as it has in that area, because the practitioners in the area so readily adopted the Catholic imagery and ideology. You know, it blended so well with their own particular faith. You know, one omnipotent God, many spirits and saints that serve that God and that came from that God, and then the priests and priestesses that could commune with those spirits and provide protection and help and all that and perform rituals for their community. I mean, it's the same underlying structure, I guess you could say, as, you know, those two religions go. They blended easily, and while I'm reading these very heavily whitewashed historical accounts of it, it sounds like they easily and readily adopted this Catholic, you know, Catholicism into their own voodoo culture.
Right.
It probably wasn't as easily and readily as it sounds. It was probably a lot more violent.
Well, I mean, religion is pretty ingrained. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think people are pretty set in their beliefs, mm-hmm. and I think change is hard in any aspect, but I think in religion it's probably harder.
I think yes, I agree with that. However, I do also think the self-preservation, the survival instinct takes over.
Right.
And the, like, hey, I'm going to hold on to my cultural practices. I'm going to hold on to my cultural beliefs, but I also am going to survive and try and limit the amount of pain that is inflicted on me. So
yeah, I think that was absolutely part of it. And I think I don't know much mm-hmm. about how, like, people who are practicing Voodoo, mm-hmm. like, came to adopt
right.
more Catholic. Like, I
well, I mean,
all if you're I read if you're, was if you, that it was to right. conform and to not to we avoid
can
being.
We can only assume it wasn't a necessarily peaceful adoption.
Yeah,
we can
exactly.
assume that, because in what universe was any conversion of people or adoption of their practices peaceful?
But we don't have the evidence.
The outcome of it was that it was adopted. And when I was doing the research for this, my mind was just like, how does the Catholic Church feel about this? How does the Catholic Church feel about this? Like, what do they say about this essentially occult religion, this quote unquote pagan religion, this Afro, you know, Caribbean religion? What do they say about them adopting the Catholic saints and the Hail Mary and these? What do they think about this?
Right.
Because you don't really see a lot of that information out there. So I had to ask my brother-in-law, who is actually, like, a very, very good resource into the Catholic religion, because he's not just a blind follower. He's somebody that I respect in a religion. Like, as much as I can respect a religion or a religious follower, I can respect him because he does his learning. You know what I mean? He learns. He reads about it. Now, he might read about it from within the religion, but at least he is very, very, very knowledgeable about where the church stands on things and where he stands on things and what the religion is supposed to be, blah, 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 all that fun stuff. But anywho, he sent me this really interesting article, and we had this very long conversation about voodoo and Catholicism, and our first conversation, he didn't know much about it, and he was like, the church is pretty much says anything that uses magic, quote unquote, or occult beliefs is evil, right? And he's like, but I don't know much about it, so I'm gonna learn a little bit more. So he educated himself a bit, probably as much as we did, and then we had this conversation, and even he was like, I didn't know that much, now I know more about it. And I even think in his mind, he's like, okay, it's not this, like, satanic, serpent-worshipping, animal-sacrificing thing that I believed it to be. It's something different, you know?
Well, they do sacrifice animals, but
right, right.
It's a different... I mean, we'll get into that.
He's not looking at it and going, evil.
Good.
You know what I mean? He's not looking at it going, bad.
We need more of that in the world. Just people learning about things they don't know about.
Which is, like, the point of this, right? And that's what I was telling him. Like, that's the point of what we're doing, is saying, you might envision this thing we're talking about, this person we're talking about, as evil, but that's just because that's how they were painted, mostly by religious people, right? But that's just how it was painted. Mm-hmm. This is just a part of human history and human learning and the human experience. And so I really appreciated having that conversation with him. But he sent me this interesting article about Pope Benedict, who had gone to Africa during this, like, big voodoo group gathering, right? And he said this quote, and I really caught on to it. It said, this love, and I believe he's referring to God's love, favors the correct integration of the authentic values of cultures into the Christian faith. So what I took from that, and that's just a small blurb from what he said, but that's what really caught my attention. It's the correct integration. And I say that with quotes. I'm air quoting. Robin sees me air quoting. Correct integration. What they view as the correct integration, Catholic Church, from everything we have read, the Catholic Church, Catholic practitioners, Catholic slave owners, what have you, had a hand in that conversion, right? They're making sure that they are working in conjunction with the Catholic Church, the Catholic faith, rather than against the Catholic faith.
And which is very smart of them.
Yes, which makes it so that it is the correct integration, right. Which leads me to believe that while the Catholic Church is like, your occult stuff I'm not necessarily okay with, but everything else you're doing pretty okay. So, like, still try and steer clear of the, you know, zombies and this, that, and the other, but you can still use our saints and you can still come to right. our church and you can still
we'll accept you at Mass.
Right.
But we're not going to talk. We're just going to pretend like you're not. Also.
You're like the redheaded stepchildren that we're going to ignore. So talking to an actual, you know, not just practitioner of the Catholic faith, but somebody who's very, very knowledgeable about the Catholic faith was really interesting in this particular topic, because it's like, I'm not asking about their opinion about magic. I already know what they think about magic. It's more like, I wonder what the Catholic Church feels about this, like, kind of religion taking over their yeah. faith. And I think I got my questions mostly answered. You know, it's still, you know, he like he said, he's like, I can't speak for the Catholic Church. He has no right to or a position to speak for the Catholic faith itself. But the history of the church would suggest, like, any kind of adoption or conversion works for them. So long as they still publicly say, like, any kind of occult stuff is bad. But, like,
yeah.
the quote-unquote correct adoption of it is okay for them. It's working for them, right?
Yeah, it's very confusing.
Well, he kind of did equate it to, as well, though, like, the different branches of Catholicism in different countries. Like, let's say Egyptian Catholicism, or, like,
Is there Catholicism in Egypt?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, but it looks very different from what the practice is like here in the United States, even.
That
or
is
like the Greek Catholicism, right? Like very different. So I think you could almost look at Louisiana Catholicism as something very different from what we would associate from just like here in Colorado, you know?
Yeah, I would be interested to learn more about that. I don't know much about modern day Catholicism,
but hey, but this isn't voodoo is fucking awesome.
It is,
and it is awesome when you think about the fact that the Catholic Church, the church that we could honestly say has like stamped out occult practices after a certain after it no longer served them, is like, yeah, cool, you know, you all got it, no problem, you know what I mean?
Yeah, like, they're just like looking the way that I took it is they're basically like looking the other way,
right?
Like they're not gonna, but I mean
publicly they say like, no, occult's not cool, but if you do it correctly with the conversion, like we're cool, right?
But
like,
it's also undeniable that voodoo has this reputation as being this evil yeah. thing because of
popular culture, essentially,
because of Christians,
right? Because of white filmmakers, right? I mean, we talk about...
Yeah, Christians and white filmmakers.
Right. White filmmakers, white writers, right?
Yeah.
You know, there's a little bit of a side note. I mean, again, just to kind of the representation, you know, the representation. I love Jane Austen. I absolutely love Jane Austen. And there's this part in Persuasion, one of my absolute favorite books of hers, where she talks about the main character is talking to somebody who is saying... women are more inconsistent in their love, right? And the main character, the lady, she's like, that's not true. And he's like, well, all of literature and poetry would disagree with you. And she says, well, all of literature and poetry are written by men. So it's very much the same thing.
Right.
All of literature is written by white men, white Christians, white colonialists in this area, in this time.
Who we're now supposed to believe are so persecuted that they... had to rise up and try to fucking take over the capital. Oh my God, I can't believe
it. Right, exactly.
We have a lot of tangents today.
So this idea of what voodoo is comes very much from people who never understood it, didn't want to understand it, were afraid of it, but were like, you can adopt some of our beliefs, sure, whatever.
Yeah.
You know?
Which honestly helped Marie Laveau.
Yes.
Like, it probably didn't help
and
the religion as a whole.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that it does in a way, because it, like, paints it as, like, It's like a tourist thing now.
Yeah, it's more mainstream.
And people are interested in it because of like, it's not the like Satanism. Dark power.
Right.
But, you know, I don't think Marie Laveau would have had the influence that she had if people like had accepted voodoo as like this like relatable, oh, this is similar to what I'm doing. No, but they gave it this dark power,
right.
And therefore they gave her
right.
more dark power.
More credence. She was yeah. a little bit more of a powerful woman. Absolutely. So lastly, a little bit more information about what voodoo is. You know, just to kind of get your mind into the vibe of voodoo. One real popular thing in voodoo is the gris-gris, which is a Wolof term from Africa. The gris-gris is a voodoo amulet. It's usually a small cloth bag with an inscription or with verses from African ancestors on it, with a ritual number of small objects inside of it, and it needs to be worn. It's usually for protection from evil, bad luck, or birth control. Which for me is saying something that birth control is on this list of evil and bad luck.
Pregnancy. Evil, bad luck.
Babies.
But you know what? You don't want to always want babies.
Especially in the 1800s when like you could die from having one very easily.
Yeah.
So.
And that hasn't changed that much either. Thanks fucking modern healthcare.
Exactly. Yeah.
Gris-gris too, another example of something that's like been given a bad name. Mm-hmm. Like I love Supernatural. I love Sleepy Hollow. Mm-hmm. But it's portrayed as like something that is used to curse yep. someone else when it was really.
It can be, but it's predominantly not that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. It's all in its portrayal. I mean, how are they going to make an episode of Supernatural with somebody making gris-gris protecting themselves, right?
It's not like, going to have the same splash.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, voodoo dolls, too.
Yeah.
Voodoo dolls are meant as, like, kind of something to attract an Iwa's influence. It's mm-hmm. not supposed to be, like, something you stick a pin in
and or like break their leg or whatever.
Yeah,
it's, which as much as I would love that to be a thing that was actually possible, my God, I have at least one person in my mind that I would use it on.
Oh my gosh, so many people, but especially one. Yeah.
Both of us, we know exactly. You're lucky we're not voodoo practitioners
and that voodoo dolls are not used that way.
But now we know, you know, from their belief that objects in and of themselves don't necessarily have magic. So they have to be sort of blessed, or a practitioner needs to give the items protection. So you can't just pick up a rock and say like, oh, hey, this is my protection or whatever. You know, it has to be blessed, or a spirit has to possess it or something for it to be a thing. The practice of making and wearing charms and amulets for protection, healing, or to protect from harm, was a key part of early Louisiana voodoo. The Owunga, which is a charm used to poison an enemy, held toxic roots of the figuramadit tree, which that's so wrong. But it was actually brought from Africa and preserved in Louisiana, which is interesting. Combined with other elements like bones, nails, roots, holy water, holy candles, holy incense, holy bread, or crucifixes. The person performing the ritual frequently evoked protection from Jehovah or Jesus because of its adoption of Catholic practices. Voodoo followers use amulets and charms in daily life for healing, protection, guidance, connection with loved ones and ancestors, which is like a big thing. Some charms are used to hurt enemies and also to protect from deceptive curses. It was helpful to keep them hidden due to the violence that had spread fear in slaveholders. Which leads us to some of the historical events that we've briefly touched on. In 1791, there was the Haitian Revolution, which ended up seeing voodoo banned until 1803 due to that revolution. And that was started by slaves who were supposedly possessed by a deity during a voodoo ritual, which is kind of the point of the voodoo ritual.
Mm-hmm.
So French colonists aggressively tried to suppress voodoo rituals to prevent uprisings. This did happen in Haiti and not Louisiana, but it did affect them in Louisiana as they were all French, right? And those same slave owners came to Louisiana. And so that's when they were like, whoa, 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 you guys got to stop this. Until 1803 when the Louisiana Purchase kind of happened. So longevity in voodoo in the U.S. was largely due to the Louisiana slaves protecting themselves and the beginning of their faith in the colonies. They were staying together. There was the family slave laws that the French had. A big thing was the respect for their elders. The I don't know exactly like why that helped with the longevity, but a lot of the scholars that I was reading were saying that like the elder were like that helped promote the longevity of it. But probably most importantly, the slaves outnumbering the slave owners 2-to-1 definitely helped. So there was a lot more slaves than there were colonists. One more little historical tidbit was that there was one famous ritual in 1995 held in Louisiana that was held to drive away crack cocaine, abuse, assault, and prostitution as well. There's no word on how well that worked because I'm pretty sure
probably not that well.
I'm pretty sure there's still all of those things in Louisiana. but they did hold a big old ritual for that. So now we kind of get kind of where it came from in the spirit of the faith. And what it turned into, what it looks like now, or at least at the time of Marie Laveau, with the grease and the rituals and the singing and the ancestor worship, that's the word, and the matriarchal type hierarchies. So I feel we're ready to get into who the main players were, who the main practitioners of this religion are, the priests and priestesses, the ones who can perform the rituals and bless the objects and be possessed by the spirits and all that stuff. So first off, in this part of our pentagram of knowledge, what is a voodoo priest or priestess? There's not a big difference in them. They come up the same way. In African Vodun, the queen mother is the first daughter from a matriarchal lineage of a family collective. So she holds the right to lead the ceremonies like marriage, baptism, and funerals. In African Vodun, she's chosen by the oracle. The priestess receives a calling from the oracle at any moment, and that's how the priests are chosen as well. They both pursue spiritual instruction. Only blood relatives are allowed in the convent or the first circle of worship. So it follows that voodoo queens were powerful female practitioners with great power in their community. They led ceremonial meetings and ritual dances, often attended by hundreds of thousands of people, which is kind of one of the things we talked about, how they kind of got that reputation by the press. They sold and administered amulets or grease and magical powder, spells, and charms guaranteed to cure ailments and grant desires and to confound or destroy one's enemies. So I think it's also important to understand, like, while it was being decried as bad and evil by most religious practitioners, there's also people who were like, ooh, this person can be magical, right? Like, it was the same with spiritualism, right? Mm-hmm. Ooh, let's have seances. Ooh, like, you can tell me my future, right? I think it was probably viewed upon the same way, and one of the reasons why it became like a business, right, of charms and stuff, because while these people were pointing the finger saying, this is evil, they're also saying, oh, but can you do something for me?
Right. Right? This is a lot of why Marie Laveau had so much influence.
Right, because it was exploited, right? Mm-hmm. So these, you know, they were supposed to cure ailments and grant desires and confound or destroy one's enemies. Voodoo priestesses are also called mambos from the Fon word nambo, or mother of magic. They perform healing work and guide others during complex rituals. Priests and priestesses serve as religious leaders, and they exert their authority over devotees or spiritual servants in their temples. Priests and priestesses are typically called into power via spiritual possession or revelations in dreams. And they become qualified after completing several initiation rituals and technical training exercises. So here is where it differs. It's not a matriarchal blood lineage anymore. It is if they come to you in a dream, or you become possessed, essentially, is what it sounds like. And then you have to go through these trials and training exercises. During these exercises and trainings, they learn the Vodun spirits by name, their attributes, and their symbols. The first step is head washing, which there is a word for it, but I can't say it. But it's head washing, which is aimed at spirits housed in an individual's head. The second step is the lie down, or, and I think this is where we get our word from, couches. So it's K-O-U-C-H-E-S, which I think is couch, which means lie down, right? Which is when the initiate enters a period of seclusion. The final step is possession of the initiate, or the sacred rattle, which enables the mambo to begin their work. These specific skills and the knowledge gained by the mambo enable them to mediate between the physical and the spiritual realms, which is ultimately the goal, right? spirit possession, either by the priest and priest or themselves, or by the devotees, which they are, you know, performing the ritual for, plays an important role in voodoo because it establishes a connection between the human beings and the voodoo deities, or how did you say it? Iowa? Iowa? I say Loa. Because Loa, I'm saying
Loa. I don't have no Iowa. Idea.
Those outside the voodoo priesthood do not have the skills to communicate directly with spirits or gods. So if you want to become possessed by somebody, you have to do it through a priest or priestess, such as Marie Laveau. So now we know what her role was, right? They led the ceremonies. They were the ones that became possessed or helped you become possessed. They were the ones that could bless the object. Let's get into who Marie Laveau was. I feel like now we can kind of somewhat appreciate a little bit more what her role was in New Orleans as the queen of New Orleans, the voodoo priestess of the time. We can understand a little bit more about what she did for her community now. So Marie Laveau was born in her grandmother Catherine's home, who was a woman who had been brought over as a slave and purchased by a free black woman, who then bought her own freedom and built a small home in the French Quarter where Marie Laveau was born and raised. Marie Laveau was said to have been, quote-unquote, gifted with beauty and intelligence. She ruled her own race and made captive of many others, which is in an article written about her in 1886. Marie Laveau was born to a multiracial woman of African, Native American, and French descent on September 10, 1801, and she died June 15, 1881, comfortably in her own home. She was the daughter of Charles Trudeau, who was the slave owner of her mother, Marguerite, who was then freed by him, but they didn't ever marry. And you said he was a mayor? He was the mayor?
Yeah, that's okay. What I read.
That's interesting. I didn't know that.
Of New Orleans.
Wow, the mayor of New Orleans. Okay, cool. That's interesting. And it's also interesting that he chose to free her as well. Obviously, they couldn't marry. There were rules against that. But she was raised by her grandmother as well. So in that little home, Marie Laveau was married in 1819 to Jacques Paris, a man of color who had fled as a refugee from the Haitian Revolution in Santo Domingo and was said to have been a cabinet maker. They had two daughters, Félicité in 1817 and Angela in 1820. So she was only 16 and 20, respectively, herself. Her husband died the same year that her second daughter was born in 1820, and somehow those two daughters have disappeared from record. Like, they don't even have death records. So nobody knows exactly what happened to them. It just can be assumed that they didn't. So it says they didn't survive, which is like, didn't survive what? Well, they didn't survive life. They didn't survive. They didn't live. After her husband's death, she did refer to herself for her whole life as the Widow Paris, or Paris. She ended up living with a man in common law marriage named Christophe Dominique Dumingue de Clabon.
Whoa.
Yeah, he was a French nobleman until he died in 1855. It was said that they had 15 children, but there were only 7 on record, according to baptismal records. So the others were probably just their grandchildren. But
I read that only 2 survived.
That's entirely possible. I didn't.
But one of her kids, I believe her youngest, was Marie Laveau.
Yes.
Who became like the.
She did. She did. And she was a bigger showman than her own.
Yeah. And she's who like was the madame who had the prostitutes in. Like, I think
she made the Marie Laveau name even more famous.
Yeah, I think like a lot of people think that they're the same one and the same, mm-hmm. but the Marie Laveau the first,
right,
was
which did you see how she got the Laveau name?
No,
me either. Because Marie Laveau, it's like her first husband's name was Paris, right? Her mother's name wasn't Laveau. Her father's name wasn't Laveau.
Oh, okay. So here's the story. Okay. I'm just reading about it right now.
Okay.
So Marie Laveau's grandmother, Catherine, was taken from Africa when she was 7 years old.
Yep.
And she was unbreakable and eventually bought her freedom out of slavery. Mm-hmm. So Catherine's daughter, Marguerite.
Mm-hmm. Who had Marie Laveau.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Was owned by her own father.
Yes.
Fucked up. And then she was freed at 18 and then forced into a arranged relationship with an older rich man. Mm-hmm. Blah, blah, blah.
Which is why she left Marie with her
She mother. Was believed to have found love with a man named Charles Laveau.
Okay, so the mother adopted that name and therefore Marie adopted that name.
Yes, and the affair resulted in an unexpected pregnancy, Marie.
Okay.
Fearful of what might happen if Marie was discovered, Marguerite had the hard choice to leave her daughter with Catherine.
Okay.
So that's where she got the Laveau name.
Okay. After her husband died, that side note, Marie Laveau ended up living in common law marriage with Christophe Dominique Domingue de Crebon, who's a French nobleman, and he died in 1855. 15 children, blah, blah, blah. She is confirmed to have owned at least 7 slaves herself during her lifetime, which is, to me, kind of a hard pill to swallow. But it sounds like it was kind of a common thing back then. There is some dispute as to where she is buried at, but the site she's said to be buried at is definitely a tourist go-to. And there's this, like, superstition that if you carve an X on her tomb, turn 3 times, knocking on the tomb and yelling out your wish, then it might come true, and then you come back and you circle the X that you...
Yeah, I read about that, too.
Yeah, which it's like, I don't know. I don't know that I'd feel comfortable yelling out my wish, but maybe that's, like, something you have to do, like... Depends on what you wish for, I guess.
That reading about that actually reminded me of being in Scotland and being at that Mackenzie.
Yeah, Bloody Mackenzie.
Yes.
Yeah, Bloody Mackenzie.
Yeah, you say like Mackenzie, yeah. Show me your shame.
Right, but it was like you weren't wanting him to grant a wish. It was
no,
like,
it was like just, the Bloody Mary thing. It was like a dare. But right. I just think that it's interesting how different cultures have like. Mm-hmm. Different traditions around going and
supernatural, right?
Yeah,
and like, but like, how dare people assume like they have the right to go to somebody who's dead and like resting or whatever and be like, grant me a wish, bitch. Like, knock, knock, knock. I know you're dead, but work for me, you know? Like, that just feels lots of graffiti going on there. Famously, the Misfits were arrested for trying to exhume her grave after a concert that had been down there. So that,
wow.
Right? I know. Our husbands, actually, they dressed up as the Misfits for Halloween one year when their band was playing. Don't you remember that? Do you remember when they were the Misfits and they had that really horrible hair gel thing going on?
Yes. Unfortunately, I do.
You're actually no longer able to visit the site of her believed burial as of 2015, thanks to all the vandalism.
Oh, wow, I didn't know that.
Yep, you can't actually... Well, and I mean, it might not even be where she's buried. It's like the Doc Holliday grave in Glenwood Springs. Like, they don't know that that's actually where he's buried because at the time that he was going to be buried, the roads were too icy for the... carts to go up, so they just
oh
like,
no
him
I thought
somewhere.
that absolutely was her mausoleum. It's not. Oh
no, there's so, like they're not exactly sure exactly where she's buried.
Oh,
there's
weird.
Just like a popular belief they're, of that kind
yeah
of like Doc Holliday's.
From what the thing that I saw said, it was the Laveau family mausoleum, but it's not. Okay, interesting.
They're not completely sure that that's where she's buried.
Interesting.
It's like it's some dispute. Yeah, absolutely. And it reminded me of the Doc Holliday one where it's like he was supposed to be buried in the graveyard, but they couldn't get to the graveyard, so they temporarily buried him somewhere else, but they never actually were able to go to that same place to dig him up and rebury him. So it's possible that his actual body is buried in somebody's backyard in Glenwood Springs and not at the Doc Holliday graveyard that you can go visit, which people go to and take pictures at. Like, he might not actually be buried there. It might just be a rock with his name on it, you know? So.
There should have been an episode of Bones where somebody in Glenwood Springs digs up Doc Holliday.
And they had to determine whether or not it was Doc Holliday.
Yes, that would have been a great episode.
Absolutely. I want to be Doc Holliday.
Wow, so many tangents today. Okay.
Okay.
Let's talk about Marie Laveau.
She was, of course, a dedicated practitioner of voodoo. She learned it from her grandmother and her daughter of the same name, also was a voodoo practitioner, but she was a bit more of a showman than her mother, which some people believe that that's how the sort of picture of Marie Laveau as this occult queen perpetuated, you know, kind of as we talked about. Laveau was also a healer and an herbalist. And she also owned a beauty parlor where she dressed the hair of the wealthy. So she obtained a lot of inside information as well as clients from those people. And through gossip, she struck fear into their servants' minds by curing mysterious ailments. So she really, word of mouth, and got her reputation from the people whose hair she dressed.
Yeah, she was very good at listening and taking what she learned about people to manipulate them.
Yeah.
And like make them think that she was reading their future. And like she was, and she also had a lot of, I read that she would, had like good relationships with like people, noble people's servants that she would use to like get gossip and.
Absolutely.
Like, she very much used her influence and where she was at in life to get ahead and become this, like, mythic figure of someone who can really, like, tell the future and who can control your life. And
I mean, what a better, like, position to be in than a hairdresser, though. Like, I not from me personally or even you. Like, neither of us are very vain about our hair, like, we're totally cool with cutting it down to an inch and like it growing. Like it doesn't matter much to us, but we know from our like society as females and males now, the person that we entrust our like hair and our external like vanity to holds a lot of power over us.
And if nothing else, you talk to them because Absolutely. It's awkward for them to like just be with you for an hour.
That's the stereotype, right? This at the salon, it's gossipy. It's you talk about things. You talk about your life. Oh, what's going on in your life, honey? Like all that.
You can only imagine how close she became with these people and how many secrets they divulged.
About
you know?
Their neighbors, their husbands, their servants, all that kinds of stuff. Absolutely. So because of that, she did become a female leader in her community as well as an activist. So one of the best things she could have done was to own that parlor and do the hair of these wealthy people. So going back a little bit into her life, her father, of course, never married her mother, but he did stand with her at their wedding, and he even gifted her a property on Love Street, which is now called North Rampart. So if you go to Louisiana, North Rampart was where she lived. She and her husband, Paris, did not live long there, though. They did end up moving to Dauphine Street until her husband's death. Her second relationship was a common law marriage because he was white, and interracial couples were common in New Orleans, apparently, but they weren't allowed to marry, which, lame. Her grandmother died in 1831, and she was about to lose the house because of debts, but her common law husband, the man she was with, Christophe, did buy the house for her, and she and their children did end up living there happily for 30 years with him. The Creole Cottage is actually on St. Anne. So I don't know if that's street or boulevard or lane or whatever, but it's on St. Anne. So
in the French Quarter.
Yeah. It was said that Marie was a generous woman and was also a big part of the Catholic Church and faith, and was known for using her means and magic to help those in need. She became the Voodoo Queen by training under Dr. John. She sold grease at the local market after church. She offered advice, provided service to the community, and led and participated in celebrations. There's the legend of her singing to conjure the great serpent spirit and becoming filled with that spirit, which is obviously the goal, which showed itself as her wearing a wooden crown, which led to her being the Voodoo Queen, from what I understand.
She also had a serpent, which she wore, a boa constrictor, named Zombie.
What?
Yes.
She had a snake named Zombie?
She did.
She was so fucking hardcore, man.
She was very cool.
God, I do not want a snake named Zombie, but I can imagine that that's really hardcore to see. Like, I would see that and be like, you're awesome, man.
No, but she was honestly a badass. She was
she was
a saint. She adopted children, fed the hungry. She like helped enslaved servants escape. She was a badass.
She was not a self-serving person.
No, she used her power for good.
Yeah,
she was a very She was saintly.
She was awesome.
Yeah.
She was awesome.
She was. She was awesome.
She also led the St. John's Eve celebrations, which are celebrations that happen one time a year in June, and they're an observation of the summer solstice or Midsummer's Eve. This meant coming together for ritual bathing in sacred waters and communing around bonfires. So not at all like Midsummer, the movie in which a lot of creepy things happen. celebrations actually do still happen yearly on the bayou, with the whole of the voodoo practicing community attending. Politicians, lawyers, businessmen, and wealthy planters all came to Marie Laveau to consult before making important decisions. So she wasn't just somebody who people would buy things from. Important, influential people would consult with her before making decisions. But she did also see the poor and the enslaved. And like you said, the enslaved people did credit her powerful protective charms with aiding their successful escapes, believing that they helped them remain sort of invisible to the people they were escaping from. So she was the go-to gal for protective charms or rituals that you wanted led or advice you needed to be given or anything like that. That's why she kind of was a big community leader and why she got such a big name as this queen of New Orleans. Mm-hmm. So there's not actually a lot of information on her mentor, Dr. John. But what I could gather was that he was sold as a slave to Cuba, but it was said that he was either a Bombarian prince or was the son of a Bombarian prince. The legend of him is one of a powerful grease man, a ladies' man, and a teacher of Marie Laveau. What history has down of him is that his West Indian master became so fond of him that he freed him of slavery. He just liked him so much that he was like, you're free. We're pals. I can't own you, right? He then left Cuba on a ship to cook, and he eventually ended up in New Orleans. Through his charisma, strength, and determination, he became a leader of a gang of cotton rollers, which, for the life of me, I could not find what a fucking cotton roller was. Like, I could not figure out what it was. I don't know what a cotton roller is, but he became the leader of a gang of them. And through that, he began to be known for his supernatural powers and fortune-telling abilities, which reminded me super hardcore of a cult leader, right? Like, just through his charisma, he was, like, convinced people that he was, like, supernatural and awesome.
And well, he was also known as healer, so I'm sure that helped.
That probably helped.
Like, probably his... I feel like people would put a lot of... they would respect someone who they thought was a fortune teller.
Or like, had supernatural abilities and can turn them into fucking snakes or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, like they quickly have influence.
Exactly. So he took his eventual role as leader of voodoo very seriously, and he brought his knowledge from his own home country to his New Orleans practices. So he didn't just whatever about it. He took it very seriously. He was also known as a great healer, and he was said to have been able to resuscitate patients on the verge of death through his rituals, which helped contribute to the myth of zombies in Louisiana. So that was one big thing he contributed to Louisiana voodoo, was this belief that he could resuscitate patients on the verge of death, which, you know, you and I both probably know it's probably had more to do with herbalism and CPR, you know, a knowledge of biology, but to the people around him, it was supernatural.
Yeah.
So that's kind of like their two main practitioners, Marie Laveau and Dr. John. They, you know, Dr. John brought his own cultural practices from his family and his experiences to that, which he, you know, then taught to the people around him, including Marie Laveau. And you have Marie Laveau, who was born into a Catholic/voodoo practicing household. So you have both of these practitioners who are perpetuating this fantastic belief system from Africa that has been changed slightly due to Catholicism and slavery. But that's pretty much it. And I know a lot of our episode had a lot more to do with the practice of the quote-unquote wizards themselves rather than the wizards. But I think it was really important to understand what a priest and priestess were and what exactly the religion was that they practiced, because that way we don't keep perpetuating this nonsense that voodoo is like this dark, evil, creepy type of magic that it gets presented as.
Yeah. I mean, there is dancing, there is singing, there is animal sacrifice. Like, animal sacrifice is a big part of the rituals, mm-hmm. but they also eat the animals they sacrifice. So I don't really know if it's...
Right.
Like, is it really that different than eating an animal in any other circumstance? Mm-hmm. It's probably ethically superior than eating a factory-farmed animal in a lot of ways.
Well, but also, too, if we go back to the fucking Bible, there's animal sacrifice.
God tells Abraham to sacrifice his son. Like, it's not... Right.
There's animal sacrifice.
And then right at the last minute, oh, just kidding, I was just testing you. Right.
There's animal sacrifice in Greek religion. There's animal sacrifice in Roman mythology. There's animal sacrifice in the Christian faith. There's animal sacrifice. I mean, this animal sacrifice in and of itself is not evil by any means. I personally, as a vegetarian, I'm not cool with it. But it in and of itself isn't an right. evil thing.
Yeah, and that's like one of the main things that, you know, white Christians point to of why voodoo is evil.
Right.
Is because of animal sacrifice.
Without looking too deeply.
Which is ironic.
Right. It's absolutely, they don't look at their own irony by any right. means. Personally, I think evil becomes synonymous with other when you look at it from a religious point of view. But nobody will ever accept anything if you're showing it as the antithesis of good. That's just how it is.
Right.
Like, it's not ever going to be accepted if you're looking at it as the antithesis of what you see or say is good. You know, and we don't see its deep connection to Catholicism. We don't see its deep connection with protection and ancestor worship. We don't see the matriarchal type of hierarchy. So I'm really glad that I got a chance to learn a little bit more about this, because I feel like I can appreciate it a lot more for both what it is and also how it survived through slavery and colonialism and Catholicism and now through capitalism. You know, I definitely think I have learned a lot more about it and can appreciate it on a whole other level.
Yeah.
For sure.
Me too.
Yeah. So, you know, thank you all so much for listening along with us to this Down in the Bayou episode of Whiskey and Wizards. I hope you're all doing well through this extended pandemic. Thank you for your patience on every single episode with us. Teaching homeschool, working from home, being cooped up and having too much to do makes it definitely harder to put on a show for you guys. So thank you so much for continuing to listen to us and for your patience between episodes and for just letting us keep doing this at our own pace. We will get back into a better rhythm, I promise. But until then...
I'm sorry about so many tangents.
So many tangents today. But you know what? We haven't really got to sit down and talk about this all in a while. So, you know, thank you for listening to us and thank you for your support. And until we get back into the rhythm of things, please continue to like us on Instagram and Twitter, share our show with your friends who also want to learn cool shit, and leave us a review or a star, and from the bottom of our hearts, blessed be, witches.
Stay excellent to each other.